Hello and welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Rima Katz. Ransomware continues to be a leading U.S. financial concern for law enforcement, government, and financial institutions, as losses and drivers for ransomware attacks are expected to grow exponentially in 2023. We dive into this significant topic today with Javelin Strategy and Research's Tracy Kitten, Director of Fraud and Security, and Alec Franks, Analyst of Fraud and Security. They break down a recent report they authored, which provides a snapshot of the ransomware negotiation landscape by spotlighting five vendors in the ransomware space that specialize in ransomware negotiation. Tracy and Alec, it's so great to have you with us today. To start, Tracy, I'd like to set the stage a bit. Why this key focus on ransomware negotiation?
Yeah, so ransomware mitigation across the board is just a huge space. And so we really had to figure out a way to kind of narrow down what it is that we were going to look at related to ransomware. And one of the things that we found in briefings that we did with several of our FI clients, financial institution clients, is that ransomware negotiation was a piece of the ransomware mitigation process that was somewhat mysterious. So most of the financial institutions we spoke with said they didn't know anything about companies that provide ransomware negotiation. And if they had a small business client that came to them for advice, or they themselves had been hit with a ransomware attack, they were really just relying on the guidance that was provided by outside legal counsel or by their cyber insurance provider. And so when we found that out and learned from the FI clients that, you know, it would really be nice if we knew something about ransomware negotiation, who is providing ransomware negotiation, who are the players in this space, what should we be asking of them, rather than just simply relying on a recommendation from a cyber insurance company and then passing that along to a small business client. So it's a very niche part of the ransomware mitigation landscape, but a very important one, and one that we found really is kind of at the crux of ransomware mitigation. Alec, I'd like to have you chime in here just a bit, because you did a lot of research into identifying the ransomware negotiation players in this space, and it really is a small market.
So we've identified three categories that we think are most important when understanding what the differences are between these different ransomware negotiation providers. We have capacity, which can be understood as the kinds of processes that would take a long time for a ransomware negotiator to change. That would include things like whether you're serving, helping with payments, helping them handle cryptocurrency conversion to payments, the level of legal support, what languages are spoken by negotiators. And then we have culture. Culture are, the way we think about it, things that would take around a year to change. Those are things like your ability to, the pricing model that you're using. Things like the documentation that you're providing, whether it's through an encrypted drive or logs and screenshots. And then what kind of concessions you're training your ransomware negotiators to pursue. So whether you're just asking them for proof of life, or if you're asking for more complex answers like proof of decryption capabilities or insight into cause of the breach. And then finally, collaboration, which is essentially just the set of practices that describe how a victim organization is going to hear from their ransomware negotiator. And so those are things that you can probably fix in a very short amount of time. So that's, are you bringing in the data protection officer, chief risk officer? Are you giving updates in real time? Are you giving them daily? Is whether you're providing public relations services, or whether you're relying on victim organizations to handle all adherence to cyber insurance or legal requirements? And so those were the three things that we felt describe the differences between these ransomware negotiators most succinctly. So Tracy, I'll pass it back to you.
Yeah, thanks, Alec. And I'll just, you know, kind of expand a bit on the three categories, because, you know, we talked about, you know, capacity, the culture, the collaboration. One of the pieces that I found to be so important, and one that was, you know, kind of came out over and over again as we spoke with these ransomware negotiation providers, is the fact that it's very important to have negotiators on staff who can speak the attacker's native tongue. So this would be in communicating with the ransomers, right? So not only does it help the negotiators quickly determine the sophistication of the attackers, but it also helps the negotiators build a rapport with the attackers, right? They kind of, you know, develop a mutual respect, which we did find, and at least it's Javelin's take on it, and this is our recommendation to our clients, is that if you have negotiators that have native language speakers on staff, the likelihood that you're going to lower your ransom is greater, and the likelihood that you're going to be hit by the same ransomware gang in the future drops dramatically. And again, a lot of that is just because of the relationship building and the rapport, but we'll delve into that a little bit more deeply as we move on with the podcast.
Tracy, why is choosing a ransomware negotiation service really important?
Yeah, so, you know, for one, we want to get to a point where we're not paying ransoms at all, where ransomware basically goes away. And as I mentioned earlier, the negotiation piece is kind of at the crux of all of this. So when you have a good ransomware negotiator, you ultimately could get to the point where you don't have to pay a ransom at all and you're able to retrieve the data. That would be an ideal situation. But we know that oftentimes that's not the case and we have to pay a ransom, but you want to pay the lowest ransom possible. You also want to think of this from an ethical perspective. So when you have a ransomware negotiator who has an incentive to get a higher ransom because they're getting paid based on the percentage of the ransom that's collected, that's not necessarily an ethical practice. And I'm not saying that we found a lot of ransomware negotiation providers out there that are doing this, but this is one of the recommendations that we include in the report, that you work with a ransomware negotiation provider that does not have an incentive to either get paid a high ransom or any ransom at all. And as I mentioned earlier, we know that if you're hit with a ransomware attack once, you're more likely to be hit by a ransomware attack again. And so having a really good negotiator is going to help reduce the chances or the likelihood that you're hit again. So just as an example, I'll bring some numbers into this. In 2021, the number of entities, so this would be corporations, public companies, anything like that, schools, any of these companies that were hit with a ransomware attack in 2021, we saw that they were hit with multiple attacks in the previous year. So 50% of the ransomware victims were attacked between 2 to 5 times, and nearly 75% of the victims were hit 2 to 10 plus times. And we know that smaller organizations are the ones who are more likely to be targeted more than once. I think the main message or takeaway from this is that ransomware attacks exploit the same types of vulnerabilities that we see with any other type of attack. Oftentimes they're getting in because an employee falls for some kind of phishing attack. They click on a link that ends up, you know, exploiting the network, or they find some kind of way to get in through a backdoor. It's a network vulnerability that they exploit. So even if you have backups of data and you get hit with a ransomware attack and say, well, I don't need to pay for that because I had backups of the data, I can get the data back. That's not your biggest worry. You need to address the network intrusion. How did the attack get in? Because if you don't fix that, you're likely to get hit with ransomware again, and they're going to get in the same way. And also, it's not just about having backups. Once you have data that's exfiltrated and appears on the dark web, now you're you know, have PII potentially of consumers that's been exposed, and this requires you to report this as a data breach, right? So it's not just about having data backups anymore, which is the way I think we used to think about ransomware. It's much more than that.
I'm curious about the role, you know, that financial institutions play in the ransomware negotiation space. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, sure. So just as I mentioned at the opening, you know, financial institutions often are providing advice to small business clients that have been hit with ransomware attacks. So it's not just, you know, their own concern about a ransomware attack. It's also the advice that they're providing to their small business clients. And so helping to guide those small business clients toward the right negotiation company goes a long way toward just building that relationship and also just helping to foster that trust in financial institutions that we know consumers as well as business clients have. And Alec, this is something that we've been talking about across both our fraud and cyber practices, as well as our digital banking practices for the last couple of years, about the need to provide advice and just provide empowerment to business and consumer customers.
Yeah, I think that you've exactly nailed it here. When somebody's hit with a ransomware attack, many of them are going to come to their financial institution asking for answers because you're expected to be the expert on any kind of money issues, and people want to make sure they're doing this right. And so financial institutions, when we talk to them, seem like they didn't have any real understanding of this space, and that's just not going to be an acceptable answer for a small business client that's relying on you for this kind of guidance. So we think that the ability to say, not only these are some ransomware negotiators you can consider, we know about these ones on your cyber insurance policies, and this is what they do, but also saying, and when you're talking to them, make sure you ask for your data protection officer to be on the call. Make sure you ask that they ask for insight into cause of the breach, giving them step-by-step instructions on how they can take this experience, learn from it, and prevent it from happening again is going to give a lot of goodwill that in a time when they are really looking for answers and really desperately looking for somebody to guide them.
Where do you think the ransomware negotiation market needs to grow or move in the near future?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's one that we've pondered, and I'll bring Alec in to provide some additional insight on this one because he had some good thoughts about, you know, the way that the market could move toward more collaboration to help raise the ethics of ransomware negotiation. But I'll just touch on a few of the points that stood out to me. Again, the native language speaking negotiators, I feel, is a top priority when it comes to ransomware negotiation, and I really think that I would like to see the industry move in that direction, get away from using online translators like Google Translate and ensure that you have negotiators on staff who can speak the native language of the attackers. You know, most of the time, ransoms are requested in cryptocurrency. Most companies are not experts in cryptocurrency payments. And so working with a ransomware negotiation provider that offers cryptocurrency payment services is a big help. It also is beneficial, especially for small businesses, to work with a ransomware negotiation provider that can help from the legal standpoint, the legal side, as well as the due diligence side. So the OFAC side, making sure that if you are paying an entity, that they're not in a sanctioned country. All of these things, you know, especially for the smaller organizations that are hit, are critical. And then just making sure when we talk about the collaboration piece that you're working with a negotiation provider that aligns with your specific needs. One negotiation provider may be a good fit for a school system, as an example, but might not be the best fit for a hospital network, right? So you need to make sure that you know exactly what it is that you're looking for as far as from a collaboration standpoint with a negotiation provider and identify that early on, right? Who do you want to have at the table? Do you want to have your CEO involved? Do you want to have your internal legal counsel involved? What types of things would you want to see out of a negotiation provider, even those things that go beyond assisting with the cryptocurrency payments? So think about what aligns with your needs, what types of incentives would you want to be looking for in a negotiation provider, and identify those, you know, before you're hit with a ransomware attack. And then I'd like you, Alec, because you looked at this quite a bit for the report, talk a little bit about where you see the need for more sharing and standardization when it comes to ransomware negotiation, especially as we think about it from an ethics standpoint.
Absolutely. So this was something that I came across in conversation with these ransomware negotiators, that each of them was doing something that every other ransomware negotiator would benefit from doing some. The sharing of techniques, standards, and the expectations of different ransomware gangs, it just doesn't exist yet. There needs to be information sharing, but also sharing of ethical standards. Because what we saw where there are ways to handle this ethically challenging problem where the existence of ransomware negotiators is facilitating the existence of ransomware and creating profits. And it doesn't necessarily need to be like that. Ransomware negotiators need to recognize their place in the ecosystem as the only ones that are able to collectively bargain with the ransomers. If they say that we are not going to accept wildly high claims and that we will not negotiate if you or with any gang that does not return or fully decrypt data, then the ransom perpetrators will have to respond to that. So sharing of ethical standards could really go a long way in handling this epidemic of ransomware and preventing the damage that it's causing from spiraling out of control. Beyond that, I think that there are certain approaches, for example, pricing model approaches that would give us a lot of space to grow. One easy example is that many ransomware negotiation firms out there, and historically many more, although many are moving away from this now, used to take a cut of the amount reduced. Well, if everybody takes a cut from the amount of ransom that they saved, then there's an incentive for both the ransomware negotiators and the ransomers to give absurdly high ransoms at the outset with the expectation they will be negotiated far down. And that puts people who aren't ransomware negotiators and just the average consumer who can't afford to hire a ransomware negotiator in a really disadvantageous position. So standardization of what is acceptable in ransomware negotiation and standardization of practices and what you're asking for from negotiators could take us much closer to where we need to be in a more healthy ecosystem.
Tracy and Alec, thank you so much for your insights and perspective. So much great data was shared. For those tuning in, you can learn more about the report that was referenced here called The Ransomware Negotiation Market Landscape and find out why Javelin deems ransomware negotiations to be a key phrase of ransomware mitigation by clicking on the link at the bottom of the article.